Hi there, this is Kat, and I support Gen X Grown Up. Whether I'm reminiscing right along with them or learning something new, Gen X Grown Up always dishes out fresh, thoughtful, and creative perspectives. You can support their efforts too. Just go to genxgrownup.com/Patreon. You won't regret it.
Gen X Grown Up is a YouTube channel, website, and audio podcast you're listening to right now. All made for and by people who love exploring media, games, tech, and toys of yesterday and today through the eyes of Gen Xers who refuse to grow up. Your dinner cannot just be french fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up. Welcome back, Gen X Grown Up podcast listeners, to this backtrack edition of the Gen X Grown Up podcast. I am John. Joining me, as always, of course, you know that George is here.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Would not be a show without Mo. Hey, man.
Hey, how's it going, everybody?
On August 3rd, 1983, less than a year before the release of Purple Rain, the attendees of a benefit concert for the Minnesota Dance Theater in Minneapolis were witness to history. On that night, in the very first live performance by Prince in the newly minted Revolution, the public heard for the first time many of the songs that would, just 10 months later, thrust Prince into legend status and mark a tectonic shift in the musical landscape that would reverberate for decades. In today's Backtrack, we will look back at, remember, and debate one of the greatest soundtracks of all time, Purple Rain.
I don't know if there's going to be a lot of debate.
Yeah, I don't know if there's going to be a lot of debate either, but, you know.
And if any of that sounds like hyperbole, it's because it was written by a longtime super fan of Gen X Grown Up, one of our patrons, and devoted Prince super fan, Marcus. He's been with us forever. When he heard the synchronicity, he said, oh my God, if you guys will do Purple Rain, I will help you write it. So, including the intro we just read you, Marcus gets co-writing credit on this episode, and many of the facts that he dug up. That way we know we're not disappointing at least the biggest Gen X Grown Up Prince cross-reference fan ever. Marcus knows this is factual because he looked up the facts. But you're right, George. It's not going to be a big, like, is it okay kind of show, right?
Yeah. No.
Purple Rain is just Purple Rain.
I mean, we did a podcast where we talked about the top 10 soundtracks of movie history at some point. I think this was our number one, wasn't it?
It was might have been. It was musicals debate, of some kind, right? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, we're debating whether this was a musical and soundtrack.
Whether or not it was a musical was up for debate. Not the quality, but whether it qualified. Right. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Yep.
But it was definitely up there in our list.
That was a backtrack about musicals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We did a backtrack specifically about soundtracks.
Oh, okay.
Oh, you're right. We did that too.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's a whole different thing.
For sure. You're right. On that one, that was number one of the soundtracks. It's been on many of our lists, and for good reason. And for good reason. So we know that the first time we did one of these based on an album, it was met with great positive response. And so just took us a little bit to get there. We are here again. So can't wait to talk about Purple Rain. Before we get to that, though, time for a quick fourth listener email. And the fourth listener this time around is Kevin, who dropped us an email. And the subject of his email is ice cream trucks.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Another of our backtracks that people have enjoyed. Kevin says, I'm still listening to your back catalog trying to catch up. I just finished the ice cream truck episode. Back in 2000 or 2001, when I worked as a mechanic for Land Rover, they would send us to other places for training. One time, they sent a few of us over to the Land Rover dealership in Houston, Texas for the summer. Mm-hmm. At that time, they had an ice cream truck that came to the dealership. Oh. Best part of it, there were two young ladies running the truck, and they came by in bikinis.
Oh.
Good marketing.
That's the business I need to be running.
Needless to say, there was always a line.
I'm sorry, I just had this picture of George in a bikini, and I'm like, I don't know if that'd work.
No, I said
run
running.
The business, not the
running,
truck.
Right, okay, right, okay, gotcha.
No.
Gotcha. Not front.
He's
man,
in the back
it.
Office.
I'm the one hiring the talent.
Oh, got it. Okay, I'm with you.
Kevin, I'm sure you enjoyed a lot of ice cream that summer while you were in Houston. I certainly would have myself. So he wraps up his email by saying, hey, John, where is the Goonies backtrack?
Refuse to do it until he watches the movie.
He says, I know it's a newer movie or show, but George could do a backtrack on Big Fur. Something he's never seen or cares to see.
Nope.
And finally he says, and since Mo didn't grow up with good music, he could do a backtrack on Waylon Jennings. So hit us all in what we don't know well. Yeah. Fair enough.
I couldn't name a single one of his songs.
Oh, Kevin wraps it up saying, as always, I enjoy your podcast. The best fourth listener, Kevin M.
Nice.
Okay, Kevin.
All right.
Now he's the self-proclaimed best. You know what? You're the only one this episode that makes you the best, as far as I'm concerned.
Just thrown down a gauntlet because Marcus wrote this damn episode. I don't know how you get better than that.
I'm not going to debate that. I'm going to get in so much trouble. So I'm going to just let that one go by. Kevin, I do want to thank you for writing in. We love it every time the fourth listener drops us a line. If you would like your email featured here on the show, it is so easy. Just hit us up at podcast@genxgrownup.com. We read every single one, and most of them, like Kevin's, will eventually make the show. All right. It is time to jump into this Purple Rain backtrack right after this.
I'm Bruce Martin, host of Pit Pass Indy. Each week, I go behind the scenes of the NTT IndyCar Series and introduce our listeners to the biggest stars of IndyCar, which features the Indianapolis 500 as its cornerstone event. The men and women that compete in IndyCar may be the bravest athletes in all of sport, as danger lurks around every corner. They are able to look danger in the eye without flinching. That is why the NTT IndyCar Series features the best racing on the planet. Join me every week as we talk to the stars of IndyCar, including the legends of the Indianapolis 500, on Pit Pass Indy from Evergreen Podcast.
Be sure to subscribe to or follow Gen X Grown Up wherever you listen. And while you're there, rate and review the show, too. It helps more than you know.
Now, the number one box office sensation comes to home video at a price you can afford. Purple Rain, Purple Rain. Prince in Purple Rain.
Why do we scream at each other? This is what it sounds like when the doves cry.
All the music you love, plus the complete movie experience on video cassette for just $29.98 suggested list. Buy it on VHS and Beta.
On sale now at all Camelot Music locations on VHS and Beta.
We have to first talk about Prince, the guy himself, before we get into the music, because, fair. I mean, yeah, there wouldn't be any of this without him. So he was born, actually, it's funny, his name actually is Prince, go figure, but it's Prince Rogers Nelson, which is, that's a handful, man. Born June 7th, 1958, so not a Gen Xer, but that's okay, he was close, in Minneapolis, Minnesota. His father, John Nelson, was a jazz pianist, and his mother, Maddie Shaw, was a jazz singer, so obviously had a huge music
born
background.
Born into music. Yeah.
And he wrote his first song, Funk Machine, on his father's piano when he was seven. Seven.
I wonder if there's a recording of Funk Machine.
I don't know if anybody recorded
that.
Find that.
Well,
though,
I mean, according to Kevin Smith, there's a whole damn archive on his estate of shit none of us will ever get a chance to hear that this man has done.
Yeah.
So I don't doubt that it's around somewhere.
Right. There's a lot of stuff out there. He's still releasing stuff posthumously. I mean, it's crazy.
He just put out so much music.
He's the busiest performer ever who's dead. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And it's not really that surprising, I guess. I mean, clearly he had a natural talent, but nurtured by two musicians in his family, which is, you see people have two actors in their family, like Maya Hawke, and like, well, obviously she's an actor, but Prince grew up in this home, first song at seven, because he had musician parents encouraging him to become that talent that he had the potential to be.
Like, I mean, from the movie, I knew about his father being a musician, but I had no idea about his mother until Mojo just informed us. But one thing that's probably not a fact that people are surprised by is that he picked up a crap ton of instruments by the time he was a teenager in the late 70s and stuff. And I guess there was like a bidding war that all the major record labels had amongst themselves, because everybody started hearing about how talented this guy was. Now, if you think about it, he's not growing up in a music-centric city. He's in Minneapolis. At that time,
of all places,
in the 70s, nobody knows Minneapolis for music. They know it for like cold Eskimos and ice cream trucks, as we were talking about earlier. They don't know Prince
they have
for
an airport,
music, but
I know there's that.
Yeah, exactly.
It's because people recognize, like you said, and you might look back now and go, like, boy, they threw too much money at somebody. None of them were wrong. Like they were all they were bidding over somebody that clearly was
they were only wrong in not throwing enough money.
Enough money.
Whatever loss
right.
was wrong.
Right. Yeah. This was clearly a once-in-a-generation talent. We know now, in hindsight, mm-hmm. they were gambling on that. And their gamble, as you said, was right. They should have gambled more, frankly. Mm-hmm. As we start narrowing in on this album in particular, so Prince's resume has some amazing stats on it. He sold over 150 million records worldwide throughout his career. His discography, 42 studio albums, including 4 soundtrack albums, 4 live albums, 9 compilation albums that has one of the soundtrack albums in it, 17 video albums, and 3 albums that came out after he was dead. Okay.
Jeez.
I mean, that's not an average talent. Not everybody has that career. Not even like Michael Jackson is still putting out albums. I mean, he's been past it for even longer. It's bananas. And his stuff is still, he has more songs, as you alluded to, that are in the estate that they're still being slowly meted out. Mm-hmm. There's more stuff that people have not heard yet. For decades, there could be more gradual. I mean, I want to hear Funk Machine. Can I hear that song?
That's the one
that I want to hear, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, and the thing was that we talked about the bidding war. I mean, he initially signed on with Warner Brothers back in 77.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
19 years old. 19 years old.
He's a kid.
He's just a kid.
Yeah.
And his contract, he produced his own albums right from the start. I mean,
now that's crazy.
Immediately.
Yeah.
Which they say, I mean, I'm sure it's happened some point, but I'm not that big a follower of music.
Like,
I would
know
that.
The only other person I could think that might have gotten that kind of control that early would have been a Stevie Wonder.
Yeah. Or
Motown.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
But most new artists, you know, they paired them with like an experienced producer usually, right?
Of course.
Kind
of makes sense.
Get them and shape their sound and figure out. But I guess, you know, he knew what he wanted to do. He knew how he wanted to make his music. And that was it.
And how easy could that have just come across as this punk? We just gave him a bunch of money and now he's going to tell us how he's going to do his albums too.
Right. And then
they
went,
but
fine.
He did it. And they let him.
Yeah. It's like, you kiss my assless chaps. I'm doing my own stuff. I mean, you move into, you know, his first release album For You in 1978. Mm-hmm. This is the one that I didn't know. I don't know who came up with this fact, but I'm going to read it just because it's impressive as hell. 27 instruments on that album. He plays every single instrument on it.
Yeah.
Jeez. So much so that the album credits just say produced, arranged, composed, and performed by Prince.
Yeah.
No other fucking names. Just
full
Prince.
Stop. Period. Man. Mm. It's unbelievable that, well, if he has that kind of talent, he's going to rise to the top. But how easily could we have, like, he'd been born into a not musical family? Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness, what would be missed out on, you know? As we get closer and closer to the album that we're going to be highlighting, or we are highlighting in this backtrack, Prince went on to achieve critical success and moderate but growing commercial success.
Mm-hmm.
He had influential albums like Dirty Mind in 1980. Mm-hmm. In 1981, he did Controversy. And then, of course, the one that I know probably the best, even better than Purple Rain myself, is 1999 that he put out in 1982, in advance of 1999. Until in 84, he blew up with the motion picture soundtrack that we are now highlighting here, Purple Rain.
Yeah.
Now, Purple Rain was his 6th studio album. Despite what we learned about August 3rd of 83, when many of these songs were first heard or recorded or seen, this album itself was publicly released June 25th of 1984.
Yeah. I mean, it's got a crazy lineage. You want to talk about statistical achievements. So first album to hit number one on the Billboard 200, 24 weeks at number one, 122 weeks total on the damn chart.
Jesus.
13 times platinum, 25 million copies worldwide, Grammy Hall of Fame, Library of Congress. I mean, Jesus Christ. I mean, what more can you slap?
Like, it's unfair.
And Cooter from Dukes of Hazzard loved it. Whatever, you can throw accolades at this damn thing. It hit every single one.
Well, and you could say any statistic, and I'd believe it at this point, based on the talent of the man and just the lineage and the history that he has had. Look, one of those could have been BS, and I would not have caught it because it fits right in with all the other credited things that it had.
And also, we talk about how good the album is. It was not just us saying that. You look at all these different lists of best albums in the world. You know, Rolling Stone, you know, it's number 2 on its list of best 100 albums of the 80s.
Oh.
It's in the top 500 greatest albums of all time by Rolling Stone. it's in their list of 25 greatest soundtracks of all time.
Just makes every list somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, basically, for greatest soundtracks, it rated second behind the Beatles' Help. I mean, come on.
Holy wow.
I mean, the only thing that beat it was the Beatles.
That's good company to be in.
Yeah.
And I might argue that point, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I would too, personally. Right? I would too.
Like, I like the Beatles, but fucking yeah, Purple Rain.
Yeah, Time has it in its all-time albums in top 100. I mean, everybody out there, you find a list of best albums, it's on there. I mean, maybe different mm-hmm. locations, but it's on the list sure. for sure.
You guys know I love movies. I actually think that I probably know a crap ton more about the film than I do the album itself. Mm-hmm. It mm-hmm. won the Oscar for Best Original Song Score. Go fucking figure.
Yeah, really. Right?
Like how it was not going to win that.
Was that a no-brainer?
If anything else had won that yeah. year, people are storming the fucking Oscar stage.
Yeah. That's right.
And slapping the shit out of Chris Rock. There is no question that this thing absolutely deserved that award.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Keep the Beatles' Help out your motherfucking mouth. That's right. Well, it also won two Grammys, Best Rock Vocal Performance by a Duo or Group with Vocal, and Best Score Soundtrack for Visual Media. So
there you go.
And Grammys, Oscars, top two, top five, top 100, top everything. It's
yeah, just rename all the categories Purple Rain and be done with it.
The Purple yeah. Rain Award. Yeah.
Yeah.
Guys, before we jump on to get into the album, though, I have to tell you, because I was a big Prince fan back in the day. I was huge.
Sure.
1999 was the second album I ever bought. Oh. And I got to see Prince in concert for the Purple Rain tour.
Oh,
and, ooh, really?
Yeah. And so I still remember this because I was in high school.
I grew up in New York where everybody goes.
No.
That was unfair
right, yeah. because it was like back in the day, tickets went on sale, sold out in hours, right?
Sure.
And now it's only the scalping market, which, you know, they mm-hmm. charge just ridiculous prices. I couldn't afford it. One of my friends calls me when I'm at my job after school. He's listening to the radio back in the day when there was radio. And they found out that
radio
one
contest?
Of the ticket masters accidentally held on to 200 tickets.
Oh, wow.
And didn't sell them. And he's like, I'm across the street right now
from that ticket
you know
master.
What the question I ask that guy is, what the fuck are you doing across the street? Get in line.
That's what I know.
Damn it.
Why aren't you
he
over there?
Me see how many tickets I wanted. So I said, get one for me and my brother.
Yep.
He went there. We were center 20 rows back.
Holy
for that
shit,
concert.
Mo.
And we paid regular cover price for it.
Oh.
So, I mean, and back then, I mean, even then, it was like, I think their tickets were about $60 a pop back then, mm-hmm. which, you know, today's mm-hmm. dollars, that's nothing, right? Let me tell you, worth every penny. Sheila E. was the warm-up. Oh, it was one of the best concerts ever.
Yeah. So it was worth the money? You enjoyed the show?
Oh, jeez. If I had the money, I would have paid a lot more. But that was the most I could afford at the time.
That's cool. Okay. Listener, here we go. When we get back from this next break, we're going to drop the needle on side one of Purple Rain and run through it song by song. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Are you tired of seeing your teen or young adult struggle on a path that clearly isn't the right fit? Is your teenager confused about which direction to take after high school? The future of work is changing rapidly, and our kids need to know all of the options available after high school so they're empowered to make the choice that is best for them. In each episode, we explore the latest trends that are shaping the opportunities of today and tomorrow. I'm your host, Betsy Jewell, and this is the High School Hamster Wheel Podcast.
You're listening to Gen X Grown Up. But if you have a friend who's not yet listening, why not? Tell them about us. They'll thank you later.
The very best of Prince. The ultimate collection from the ultimate artist. Tonight, 17 of Prince's masterpieces on one CD.
Just like with our synchronicity backtrack that we did, there are two mm-hmm. sides to this album, as there are on most records.
with most albums.
Right? I mean, not all. I've seen some that just have one side, but this one starts off with what Marcus, the guy who helped us plot out most of the podcast here with mm-hmm. the factoids he found and all, just the fact that he loves this this album in general. The best fucking album intro of all fucking album intro time.
Is that a direct quote?
That's a mouthful that completely encapsulates this song for me. It's not just that it was a great album, but the eulogy for this thing called Life, the little segment at the beginning of Let's Go Crazy, it's an introduction to that song, but because it's a spoken word segment, it's an introduction for the whole concept of the album, and it's perfectly delivered and done. It's got the nice little, kind of like a synthetic organ that you would hear at a hip church in the 80s, maybe.
Yeah, I can hear
that. That's playing behind him, and then you've got his spoken word, and then it ramps up into the beat. It's one of my, if not my favorite song on the album. I mean, all the songs on this album are great, so that's a really difficult thing to say, but holy shit, is this a great song to start with.
Yeah. This song is like so motivational and fun. Even when you start with like the organ thing, which by the way is really cool, I will admit, like the lyrics are about getting through life and battling against evil and, you know, finding the good and those sorts of things. And it's not all of the album is like that. And there's songs on the album we'll get to later that are about loss, and one's about love and one night stands and things like that. But for a starter, for an upbeat kind of like, let's get this party started, that's the one that's had to be first. And it is. It makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, also, you can't forget the guitar solo at the end of this thing.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. And this, someone just annoyed me to no end in New York. On the radio stations, they would cut that out.
Oh, because they had to get on to the next song.
They had to get on time because it was too long. And let me tell you, that was the most annoying, because the song ends, you hear the first chord of that guitar solo, and it just fades out.
Yep. Kind of like what a lot of radio stations did to Layla, the Eric Clapton song, right? Yeah. They cut that whole second half off because, you know, it doesn't necessarily go with, but it's an integral part. I found it interesting that they had the unedited version in the movie, which originally they were going to put on the album, but they wanted to make room for another song, Take Me With You, so they did have to cut it down for the album version. But apparently the plan all along was to use the movie version, which doesn't always happen. Usually you get a specific album version on a soundtrack. You don't often get the movie version. One of my sore spots with Color of Money, that soundtrack is that a lot of the songs that were in the movie didn't quite end up the same way on the soundtrack, even though I love soundtrack, but oftentimes the album dictates the songs, not the movie. In this case, it was going to be the movie.
Yeah, Marcus gave us a few stats here too. This is the second number one hit on this album, certified gold by the RIAA. 965,000 downloads, digital sales, of this song. And then, in 2016, after Prince died, this song went back to number 25.
Wow.
Again. You know, it didn't get re-released or anything. It just, now it's back on the charts again because of people, Prince is foremost in their mind. Because I guess how emblematic this is, and you can imagine, you know, we had just lost Prince to a stupid series of events where he didn't surround himself with people that told him, you know, check yourself or you wreck yourself kind of thing. It was a tragedy. And so you can imagine this feeling of loss. They want to hear him singing about the positivity of life and what he represented, not what was emblematic of his passing. So I can see why that may have happened. A great first song for an album.
Yeah, it gets you pumped for the whole rest of the thing.
Absolutely.
And there's not another one here that I would have picked first. It makes sense. It does get me pumped. Yep.
Wow. I mean, how do you follow up Let's Go Crazy? But he did, right?
Yeah.
The second song of the album, one of my favorite ones too, is Take Me With You.
I don't care.
I think it's the only duet in the album, and it's with the phenomenally talented and gorgeous Apollonia Cotero.
Yeah.
From the movie. I mean, she is just obscenely attractive. I think this one, I just liked it because, one, he's doing a duet. He doesn't overpower. I mean, he could easily overpower anybody he sings with.
Certainly.
I would think. But he just blends his voice with hers, and I think it just makes it just a gorgeous song.
Yeah, and it's really nicely placed in the film as well. I mean, I know we're talking about the album, but this one has significance to the film because it's them coming together as a couple in the movie when they're riding on his motorcycle. They go to the lake, and he plays the little gag joke on her and everything about Lake Minnetonka and everything. It's a really nice, smooth, like, I don't know, sultry song a little bit, but not like in a, I don't know, negatively adult way. It's just, it's really nice. It's refreshing almost.
And obviously, it seems like this is one of Prince's favorite songs too, because it was like a staple in his live set lists, like afterwards. Like he always seemed like this song always seemed to come back up. Maybe it's because it was a duet too, so he could bring other singers in with it. I don't know.
There's a trend on this album that this album I enjoy. I listen to it regularly, but it's not one of my favorite albums, so I don't know it intimately. So I had to go back and re-listen to this to re-familiarize myself. I'm like, oh, that was on this album? That was on this album? I hear the songs individually. I don't know that I've ever listened to it as a cohesive piece. And what I noticed is starting with this song, and I guess not surprisingly for a man of, I guess he was 24, 25 at the time he recorded this. It's a lot about, it's almost like high school drama. And this is, it's but wanting love, seeking relationships, seeking acceptance. The lyrics of this are all about almost desperate for companionship. It's like, just take me with you. Whatever you do, just, I want to be there. I want to be with you. It's a young person's craving for intimacy. I mean, both physical and emotional, that is not in this song, but in more of them that throughout this album. And I guess it makes sense he was at that point of his life where he's finding himself and how he relates to other people in the opposite sex.
Well, and it's probably flavored an awful lot by his family relationships, because we know he had a lot of issues with the fatherly, abusive love thing that was going on in his household. So I imagine that that desperation you're talking about seeped its way into the song, where he's transferring the love that he didn't maybe receive or felt like he needed from his parents, that he was transferring it to the next individual, and in this case was the object of his desire.
Sure. Yeah. Makes sense. Now, the third track on this album is another one that is about looking for love, looking for companionship, and that is The Beautiful Ones. This track is a real slow jam. Most of it is a slow jam, I will say.
Yeah.
And I think in this one, Prince really shows off his vocal range. He goes from very soft and tender, and then gets kind of becomes a crooner, and then he's kind of just suffering and anguish. And then by the end, there's this, the, just the stereotypical Prince screaming, just row, row, row. He does this thing that somehow it doesn't sound like screaming. It is still a vocal performance. It's still singing, but it's this over the top, almost a screech that he does, showing this just crazy passion that he has and is exhibiting in this song.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for me not to remember the scene from the movie with this particular song, because, you know, he's singing it to Apollonia with Morris Day was like right next to her. He's trying to convince her to come to his band.
Right.
And he's singing this to her. And I'm thinking, I remember as a kid, I was even watching this. I'm like, if somebody's singing that to your girl right next to you, you're screwed. I mean, you're
there's no coming back.
Just leave at that point, because there's no way you're winning that, you know, winning that one.
As we were talking about that last song, this is another one about finding love. In this case, finding true love, not so much just an infatuation, but seeking for that kind of love. And it's in that kind of impassioned voice we were talking about. It's like this desperate plea to be accepted in a relationship. And again, George might go back to his home life as well. I mean, he's seeking it in the arms of a lover here, a companion, but it might be an affection or attachment that maybe he didn't feel he fully got in his home life.
Yeah, I mean, he's still young at this point, like you said, his early 20s. There's no question that, you know, as we all are going through those stages in our life, that our home life, or, you know, trouble or lack thereof, colors everything we see or do or think or feel. And considering that his outlet is so creative, you know, being a songwriter and a musician and a singer and everything else, the only wonder is how it doesn't come through even bigger and louder, right? Like, he's so good at pulling it back just enough to let you have time to think about what he's singing for and through, that it really highlights his genius to step above his personal turmoil to put something into song that everybody can relate to, but still leave enough in there that 40 years later, we're still, you know, like, oh crap, what about this part?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was reading that there was an interview where Prince said this song was about vanity. That's what he wrote the song for.
Oh,
because
okay.
Apparently she was supposed to be in the movie and she backed out, and that's why he got Eplin to replace her. And he says, you know, the beautiful ones are the ones you always lose and all that. I mean, that's where.
Oh, okay.
So that's supposedly straight from Prince. A lot of people speculated who he's writing it about, but I guess that's it.
Mm.
All right. The next song in this album, it's a weird one for sure. Has the weirdest introduction, I think, of any of the songs, but it's Computer Blue.
Mm.
Actually, this is one of the few songs that he actually didn't write himself. Like, he wrote with the other members of the band. So this is actually kind of a group collaboration song.
Okay.
And you kind of hear that too, I think, a little bit in the song. It doesn't sound quite the same as all the other ones. You know, it definitely seems a little different.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I find the beginning to be, and artists do this, especially artists that have full control. If this was micromanaged by a producer, they would have been like, okay, listen, Nelson, cut it out with this squealy synth at the beginning. Just get right into the pop song. But instead, we get this real, like, ethereal kind of weird synth going on at the beginning that, like, what did you said is sound like it belongs in, George, you said in
Blade Runner
or something.
Blade Runner. I feel like the first part of the song should be in the movie Blade Runner. The second part of the song should be in the movie Weird Science, because they're it's almost like they're two separate pieces.
It is, like, they're stitched together. That intro is, and the second part is very, very poppy, very rock pop kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it's, to hear the beginning, like, I could see somebody going, oh, that's not for me, and skipping it, and not knowing that it turns into a different song in a second here. I know that Marcus called out, being an expert on the album and the artist, that things to listen for here are the indulgent synth guitar and a Linn drum machine. I guess that's a particular one that Prince used. And that this whole, it feels like an interlude or something. Like, it's this breath between a couple of things, which I guess I could see. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a bad place in the album to have that, though. If you're listening to this album, side one to side two in order, that's probably a good place to throw the interlude, if you're going to call it that, in this musical mix.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's one that I would come. This is one that I would skip to. Like, if I was if I happened to have the album, I told you I didn't listen to the whole album together. Like, I would listen to When Doves Cry, I would listen to Computer Blue and Purple Rain. Like, those are my three I would always make sure I heard. If I didn't hear, well, then I kind of had to listen to Let's Go Crazy. Okay, I listened to most of it, maybe not in sequence, but this is one I always really enjoyed. But I enjoyed that second part, not so much the weird synthy beginning, because it was kind of spacey and loopy kind of thing, you know.
I still never understood the beginning of this thing, though. Like, what that had to do with anything, with Wendy and Lisa talking to each other.
Is
the water warm enough?
Is the water warm?
I never understood what that had to do with anything. I mean, I was with it. I went with it. But I never, to this day, understood why.
Like, you kind of wonder if that was describing a scene that was supposed to be shot in the movie that never got shot, or ended up on the gutter room floor, maybe. Or something. The last song on album side one... As Mo pointed out, most albums have two sides. This is side one.
Just thought I'd point that out, you know, for our listeners.
Like a pancake.
I appreciate that. Is Darling Nikki.
Ooh.
Mm.
She took me to her castle and I just couldn't believe my eyes. She had so many devices, everything had money, goodbye. She said, sign your name on a dotted line. The lights went out and Nikki started to grind.
I like this song.
I think this song probably matured me faster than anything else in that age of my life. This song is like, I don't know how to describe it other than it's like power synth rock through parts of the song. It starts off just kind of, I don't know, like molasses slimy kind of.
Yeah, the beginning almost sounds like carnival-ish at the beginning. Like,
yeah,
the whole,
a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just like a, yeah.
But there's no question in my mind that as soon as you get into the lyrics of this song, you understand right away why a lot of adults had problems with this album. It's apparent.
Let's just come right out and say, this is a dirty song, and it's fun.
Oh, yeah. It is.
You know?
It's fun.
It is. It's it's pretty straightforward what's going on. Mm-hmm. Like, there's not like, oh, there was a lovely young lady, and we met, and we had some... No.
What did the unicorn mean here?
I saw her masturbating in the lobby. Yeah. Like, whoa! Yeah. You know,
I was like, I still remember I was listening to this record in my room. I look up and my dad's like in my doorway because this song was playing. And he just stood there and he's like, he cocked his head. He's like listening. He looks at me. He shakes his head. He just keeps going. That's it.
That's kind of the scene in the movie too, though. Like, nobody is saying shit when he's playing this song on stage, right? Like, everybody's like, what the fuck
what
is
the
he
hell?
Playing? And like Morris Day, you know, because he's like the bad guy, you know, counter to his, he's like, oh, he done fucked up now. This is our stage. They're going to kick him out. I mean, it was a crazy diversion, but it kind of feels like side one builds to this point.
Yeah.
If you listen to all these songs in a row, you get to this point. I don't think it's a surprise that you get there. It's just a shock when you are there.
That's an amazing point, right? So we get the party started. Then we're looking for love. We're trying to find true love. And finally, we meet this girl in the lobby. Like, oh,
finally, we're wet. That's all we know.
And it's a one-night stand song. It's pretty much what this is. Pretty straightforward. And not only are the lyrics raw and primal, but the rhythm mirrors that. It's a very grindy kind of song. It has a little edge to it.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't want to. I can't unhear George making that noise. Oh my goodness! Help! Help.
You can't unhear some things, John. Sorry, but also the way the song ends is weird. Like that whole, it's like that whole. Mm-hmm. It's Prince talking backwards.
It's backmasking, right? I thought it was. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, why do that? Because, like you said, it's this whole like raw, just song. And all of a sudden you get this weird little light, like kind of like almost whimsical ending to this thing, which I thought was just, it was weird. I loved it again. I'm not going to pretend I understand it. I just liked it. But it was definitely something different for sure.
I didn't, but I kind of want to just take and play that track backwards to see what Prince was saying there. Because I don't know.
I can tell you.
I wonder if it's. Oh, do you have it? You know what he's saying?
Yeah, I have it.
Okay.
It What's says, he saying? Hello, how are you? Fine, because I know the Lord is coming soon. Coming soon. That's what he's saying.
Okay.
Okay. That's
not what I thought it was saying, but okay.
Nope. To me, John, you mentioned about, one-night stands. I always think of a one-night stand song in the country genre. I never think about it in the rock genre. This kicks every country one-night stand song in the nuts, left, right, and center.
Right.
This is the best one-night stand song in the world.
Right. Now, the country songs are, I'm sorry at the honky-tonk, she had tight jeans, took her home, and she was a lady for
looking
me.
Looking for love
right?
and all the
no,
wrong places.
No.
Nah.
Now it's like, what's the noise you made? Can you make that noise again, right. Roger? Whatever that was. Oh, that's the one. That's the one.
Don't make that sound anymore. Yeah.
So according to Marcus, and as some is corroborated elsewhere in the news, parental advisory stickers were started around this song on this album. And it happened because Al Gore's wife did not respect her 12-year-old daughter's privacy and heard this song and was unhappy about it.
Right.
Now, there might be some argument that as a parent, she's entitled to know what her child is listening to. That's fine, but she was being nosy.
This is not a song for a 12-year-old. I kind of agree
That's
with
fair.
Al Gore's wife in this case. I'm sorry. Parental advisory. Like, it's not the band, like, you guys can't have this album at Walmart kind of thing. But, advise the parents
it's
a little
like,
bit.
It's like, make you aware of what's on this thing, right?
Let you know I'm okay with into. That. Yeah. Now, when I was 12, fuck you, parental advisory. I didn't want to hear it, but.
I want to hear it.
Well, hey, podcast listener, my name is Vince, and I'm the host of a show called The RR Show. It stands for Reddit Readings. We're going to sit down twice a week, and I'm going to bring you the most entertaining stories from all of the best subreddits that exist online. Things like malicious compliance, petty revenge, hey, lady, I don't work here. Oh, there's so much more. Lots of great stories and things you won't believe. Like the one time this dude was caught in a bathroom with his friend and he was slapping them because that was the only way that he could actually legitimately help them. A mall cop comes in with a taser. Oh, yeah. The rest is history. It's going to be fun. There is, I don't know, I got like 20 seconds left, so I don't got much more time to tell you another story. But just join me on The RR Show. It's from Evergreen Podcast, produced in partnership with Wessler Media. So The RR Show, wherever you get podcasts, subscribe today. And it's like an adult story time. Let's hang out together. The RR Show. Subscribe today wherever you get your podcasts.
Each episode of Gen X Grown Up has show notes loaded with links where you can learn more about our topics. And there's even more to see and hear over at GenXGrownUp.com.
Let's go crazy.
Grins.
Let's get nuts.
The Purple Rain Tour. Friday, December 7th at the R. Prince and the Revolution, and introducing Sheila E. Get tickets on Monday at Festival Tickets 224 Delaware, and at all the usual festival outlets states in Canada.
Prince.
The kid is hot.
We're just a little bit over halfway through the album now. Side one had 5 tracks. Side two has 4. And side two kicks off with a really 80s hit that there's no denying. And that's When Doves Cry. This was the lead single for the album. In fact,
yeah, what a song.
The video for this song came out before the movie did and had clips from the movie.
Yep.
So you got this kind of sneak peek of what was coming up in the movie if you were a Prince fan or just a fan of good musical movies. And so this is immediately catchy for me. It has a bit of a, we were saying in the break, George, it has a little bit of that spoken word at the beginning, a little bit like the beginning of the album, but it gets right into what is a just a seminal 80s pop song that it's immediately catchy, immediately a toe tapper. But interestingly, in a minimalist style, there's no bass in this song. I didn't realize that until I read the trivia that Marcus gave us here.
Okay,
no bass at all. So,
interesting.
I had no idea.
It was like,
exactly.
One thing I want to bring up, though, is like this is something that today, I'm not saying people are missing it, but it's just different, is that back then we had, album had 2 sides. The first song, both sides, was really important.
Important, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like when you flipped over, that first song had to be important. It had to keep you playing the rest of that side. So for this to be like the kickoff song for the second side of this album was just like hitting a home run, like right away.
Made sense, yeah.
I mean, arguably, we have a segment later on where we're each going to get to champion a particular song from the album.
Right.
I don't have this as the song that I would champion because I honestly figured, okay, somebody else wants this as much or more than I do, and let me pick something else. But it may be the greatest 80s pop song. I mean, it is huge when it comes to... I was totally shocked. We talked about it last week on the podcast that we went to SFG and there was an 80s band there. I was 100% confused as to how this song or any of the songs from this album weren't
didn't
on
make
the
it
set
there.
List.
Right. Mm. Huh. Yep. Well, it's not a solo opinion, George. I mean, to reinforce what you just said, you think it's one of the best, you know, 80s pop songs. Marcus gave us some stats here. This was Prince's first Billboard number one for 5 weeks.
Do you believe that's his first number one song? That just blows my mind that that's his first number one.
That he'd gone through several albums first.
1999 was going to be
the first number one song.
But
let's see. This was the top-selling single of 84. So When Doves Cry, top-selling single. Certified platinum. 1.75 million digital sales in the United States.
Mm.
And again, in 2016, it recharted after Prince's death, went to number 8 on the Billboard 100.
I want to know what the fuck the other 7 songs were.
Right? And this particular song, number 37 on Rolling Stone's list of 500 greatest songs of all time.
That's pretty good.
No, it's no slouch.
It's funny, you talk about the digital sales. I mean, that means that that's how many people downloaded it well after the album came out, you know, because we didn't have digital downloads when this album came out.
Of course, not so 84. No.
That's pretty amazing.
I love that. One more little bit of trivia about this song. This, of course, Marcus seems to have a soft spot for this song because he had a lot of info on it. But this is really fascinating. In the middle of filming the film, Purple Rain, Prince was called by the director and said, "Do you have a song to go with a montage about intermingled parental difficulties and a love affair?" Very specific. He didn't, but the next morning, Prince had written 2 songs, and one of them was this one.
Wow. Was he early ChatGPT or something? Like, was that like you give him like a small prompt and he just generates something?
Prince GPT, just go make...
Right?
Yeah, Prince, give me a song about intermingled parental difficulties and a love affair in the tone of a pirate, right? and whatever. Just give him anything, and he's going to give it to you. And just amazing that this song, one of the best songs of all time, was written by request of the director to fill in a particular spot in a movie that he needed.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, just, okay. All right, Nelson. Apparently, you're awesome. I get it.
Yeah. I mean, for me, though, to me, just the opening guitar riff right at the beginning of this song is, I don't know, it just grabs me every single time.
Oh, like, yeah.
It just pulls me right into the song.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's that little guitar riff and then down into the beat.
Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. It seamlessly falls right into it like it's natural. Oh. All right, three left on this side of the album. Before we start, Mo, you're going to do this next one for us, but I wanted to mention, we talked at the top of the show that August 3rd, 1983, when there was that big concert, these three songs on the album were recorded on that August 3rd concert. These were the ones people heard for the first time.
The last three here on the album.
These last three that we're about to do, yeah.
Ah, okay. All right, so let's jump into the second song on, this, on side B of this album, and it is I Would Die For You. Typical Prince using a U instead of spelling it out, and a four instead of before anybody else, before the computers, he was doing that. This is such a great, upbeat, high-energy song. And, I mean, in the movie, it was placed perfectly because it's right after Purple Rain, you know, which is kind of like a very dramatic song. And then they go into like this amazing, just upbeat, just exciting, full of energy song. This is definitely one of my favorites from the album.
Yeah, it's a solid song. It brings a resolution to the story from the movie. Mm-hmm. It's kind of the order that they have on the album doesn't quite fit the order of the film, but that's okay because the last song on the album is fucking awesome. Who cares where it goes, right? It could be in like five different positions on the album.
Yeah.
But this song, it was a really nice kind of a sum up of the whole emotional context of the relationships of the storyline. Because it wasn't just Prince and Apollonia. It was his mother and father and even stuff with Morris Day and the time and their, you know, like, oh, we recognize Prince, you know, all like that. It's a beautiful song on so many different levels.
Yeah. And it was the fourth single that they released from the album. And it was the last one to reach top 10. So it reached number 8 on the Billboard list.
Oh, poor Prince. Only number 8. I feel
only
bad.
Number 8. Yeah.
Like some of the previous ones, too, I feel this really shows Prince's age. And I don't mean that derogatorily, but he was a young man. This is a lot about relationships and stuff in here. And I Would Die For You, I think, is the epitome of this, almost like a high school or junior high infatuation song. To the point that, like, I would put my own life at risk to benefit you, the listener. That's how much I love you and care about you. And it's a crazy over-the-top love. I'm not saying that love like that doesn't exist. It clearly does. But think about when you're young, how just incendiary love feels. Like, what is this emotion? It's tearing me apart. I can't believe how powerful it is that you're willing to put your own life at risk. And it might be something that an older man, an older Prince, might not have had a song quite this volatile or quite this, I want to say, just all in on this person unconditionally. But because he's that age and because we hit him at this point where he has this full control, we have a song like this that other people of that age would not have been able to convey through music like he was able to. So thus we were able to get a song like this, which is pretty remarkable and powerful because of his amazing talent and the control that he had.
And this one also, you see a lot of Prince's religious beliefs too. I mean, he was very religious.
Yes.
And you know, things like, I'm your Messiah and you're the reason why. I would die for you. That's a great, you know, message from Jesus.
Certainly.
You know,
symbolism.
You know, so you see a lot of that into it, but to me it's just like an upbeat love song. It really kind of, I don't know, I'm trying to figure out, you know, it's not sappy, but it's definitely talking about like a relationship and how much he's devoted to the person and all that stuff. But it's very upbeat, which is weird actually in a way. You think about it.
Well, and to your point, it's instantly a fun song too, before you know what the lyrics are, before you pay attention. Just the staccato of the I would die for you, it feels just energetic to a point that, like, that's great. And then you hear the lyrics and you're like, well, and it is this great, you know, all-in love song on top of being such a fun pop song? So, yeah. Spoiler alert, listener, in the break a second ago, I'm like, I might change my favorite to this one later. And then we started talking about jockeying them around. It's like, it's the problem is there's just so many good ones. That's the problem.
Yeah.
So, and Marcus points out that Prince typically would play this song, I Would Die For You, back to back with the next song that appears on the album, but also because it's the next song that appeared back to back in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And that movie that is also the last song in the movie is Baby, I'm a Star. Mm. Obviously, this song sums up the story completely. So the first song that we had just a second ago summed up the relationship part of the story from the movie that was also the album. This one sums up the entire storyline, gives us a period on the end of the sentence for the movie's paragraph. And it's proclaiming Prince to become the next big thing. Surprise, fucking surprise. That's exactly what happened.
Yes.
You know, I mean, he becomes that. You know, I know that there's some lines that we've got on this Trello card about that's a prophetic song and everything like that. Hey, regardless of whether this is your favorite song on the album or one that you would listen to just because it's on the album and you're waiting to get to the next song that we're about to talk about, it's still a great 80s pop song.
Uh-huh.
Undeniably, it is 100% in that genre. It's perfect for that time period. It's perfect for the movie. It's perfect for the story that he's telling with the album and the movie. It's perfect in every aspect that it's used.
I'll tell you what I love about this particular song is how it stands out and is different from, I think, every other song on this album, where the other songs are about reaching out for a relationship, for approval from an other, for I Would Die For You, right? Or the loss of When Doves Cry or something. This one, though, it's about me. It's look at me. Look how confident I am. Look how awesome I am. I believe in myself. I'm an individual. It's not looking for, it's finding that validation within. And in a funny way, it's going to sound silly, this song reminds me a little bit of Toby Keith's How Do You Like Me Now, where he finds fame and validation through his music, which is kind of the, you know, oh, you kind of disregarded me before, but look at me now. Look who I am. Look what you missed out on kind of thing. I love that kind of self-reliance and it shows even just throughout this album, some emerging maturity here's Prince as this young man who's talking only about sex and relationships and love and infatuation. And here it is, but I'm my own man and I stand on my own two feet and look what I can accomplish. I'd love that about this song in particular.
I just like the way this song and the song before just kind of go together. I mean, especially in the movie, because you think you think you're listening to the final song, right? And then all of a sudden it just goes right into the night. I'm like, I was so happy. I'm like, oh, we got another freaking song. Awesome. And it's
still going.
And the energy doesn't come down at all. They just flow perfectly one into the other.
It's like that point of the concert where you're like, oh, he's done. Oh, no, wait. There's still more. Awesome. Yeah. Right?
Two encores. Yeah. Yes. Right. It's all
exactly. And it kind of plays during like the ending video sequences as well as what might be the credits or something like that of the movie. This is a song, and there's other movies that do this same thing, like an Eddie and the Cruisers 2 or, you know, musically based films where when they get to the song, there's a moment in the song where you're okay with like the freeze frame spot of the ending of a movie, you know, like where the lead character spins and whips their hair and boom, freeze frame.
That's the freeze, right?
Like that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I found an interesting bit of trivia about this song. He originally wrote this to be the parade song in Batman for the Joker.
What?
Huh.
Wow.
What? So he was working on the Batman album soundtrack at the same time?
I guess so. I mean, it came out in 84. That's when Batman came out, right? It was that same year, wasn't it?
I guess.
Or was
it
about
connection.
The same time?
I'm like, okay, all right.
But wow. But there was some reason that didn't want to use the song, so he decided not to, but it wound up here.
Fucking A. I could see it in both places and be happy. It's kind of like the Oh Yeah movie that was in Ferris Bueller and Secret of My Success, right? I'm great with that song being in both films. This one would be absolutely perfect as the Joker's Parade theme song.
No kidding. We have made it now to the final track on side two. Also the final track of the album. Also the title track of the album. Also a fucking amazing
song. What could it possibly be?
Huh.
Speaking about this track in particular, Prince, with inclusion of this track, had the number one movie and the number one album and the number one single all in the same week. That's been done only twice before. By Elvis Presley and the Beatles. That's it. And Prince is the third person to ever do that.
I think they were pale in comparison, but okay.
If you have not yet picked up on what I'm putting down, we're talking about Purple Rain. Phenomenal song on a phenomenal album. I should clarify that this track in particular only reached number two. He did have a number one song at the same time as the album and movie, just not this song, one of them off the album.
It's like Bruce Springsteen not having a number one, right?
Yeah,
it's
I know.
Ridiculous.
And would you believe this was number two? What made it number two?
That kills me.
Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go.
Oh, my God.
The song that I skip every time I see it.
Okay, now I don't really disagree with you, but I just watched that whole
the Wham documentary.
I kind of have new respect for those guys in this song after seeing that documentary. So I'm not saying this should be number one over Purple Rain. I'm okay with it being number one until Purple Rain came out.
Until it got there. Well, even though it was only number two, certified gold, as you might imagine, in 2016 after the passing of Prince, it recharted to number four. Mm. And this particular song, number 18 on Rolling Stone's list of 500 greatest songs of all time.
Does that mean that this song has never hit number fucking one?
That's
never.
What it sounds like.
Yeah, never
it just,
did.
It was just
holy
up there with so many
shit, heavy.
And it was competing with itself, too. There were other songs on the same album fighting it, you know?
Well, Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go.
All you Spotify, Twitter, X-y people, whatever the hell the Twitter versus things are, go out there and listen to this fucking song right now so it can be number one next week. This is bullshit. This is the utter version of the song thing of bullshit. This is ridiculous. Never number one?
Never number one.
First I know. Now, the song's title, Purple Rain, I think is, I've read that it's symbolic of a quiet storm. That's what the purple rain represents, in which the singer, Prince in this case, and the other person they're talking about have to weather their emotions together to find peace. So it's working through this storm, emblematic of working your way through this relationship to find an actual part where I'm happy and you're happy. And the song also talks about that relationship between these people, that it's filled with such raw emotion, but also looking for a deeper connection. I think that's in there too, which adds to the power, I mean, beyond the musicality, just the lyrics make it so powerful.
Yeah, for sure. I was shocked to find out that this was originally written to be a country song, and he was going to collaborate with Stevie Nicks.
I can hear that, yeah.
Oh, okay. That's a different kind of country song than if you're talking about Stevie Nicks.
Not the twang country.
That's the twang country.
Right.
And this is the way it reads anyway in Wikipedia and other stories I've read, is that he sent it to Stevie Nicks to do the lyrics, and she listened to it, and she's like, she says, I can't do it. She says, it was too...
She thought she wasn't up to the task.
Yeah, she said, it was too much for me. Mm-hmm. And then so basically then he brought it back to the Revolution, the band. So Lisa started playing like the guitar part over it, and he loved that, and he says they basically played it for like 6 hours straight, and then they had the final version at the end of that.
Wow.
Think about the balls on that young 20-year-old to send a song to Stevie fucking Nicks. Hey, take a shot at this.
Yeah. I mean, you're not busy, are you?
Right.
She's a fucking queen of music at that point.
Oh, yeah.
That's
huge
crazy.
Back then.
Mm. Now, you know that chant at the end of the song, that was made up by Prince on the fly at that August 3rd show, the thing that kicked off this whole backtrack. He was performing the guitar solo, and he just spontaneously came upon that riff. He never played during any of the practices, but he knew he was onto something because he played it for almost an entire minute at the end of the first recording, working out the whole woo-hoo-hoo chant and stuff that people still sing along anytime somebody plays Purple Rain. Yeah. That was extemporaneous. That was in the moment.
Wow.
At that amazing 1983 concert that brought us these songs.
That's kind of like a Queen, Freddie Mercury, Band-Aid kind of moment.
Right. Exactly right.
Well, just think that if this wasn't recorded live, we wouldn't have it.
Not in its form. Not the way
not
it is.
Not in its form, right?
Certainly not.
Yeah. Jeez.
I mean, okay, so sports guy of the podcast trio here, I'm going to bring up the fact that this is part of what is considered to be the greatest Super Bowl halftime of all time.
Oh, yeah. Right? Wow. Right, right.
Not just because it's fucking Prince. Like, don't get me wrong. There have been amazing acts. The one that just happened a few years ago that was like Dr. Dre and Eminem and all those guys that was awesome, too. I love that. But
it's like nature conspired to make it even better.
Right, because during the last half of the set, it fucking starts literally raining,
pouring.
And the last song on the set is Purple Rain. They're lit up purple. I remember the giant flowing banner with a shadow behind it cast up on it and everything. To this day, John, we talked about this at SFGE a little bit with Marcus and other people. I don't really have music moments that make me tear up. I love it. It's great. I don't have the same emotional connection to music that I do to film. However, that moment, now granted it's a visual moment, but that moment still almost makes me tear up just thinking about it. It was
powerful.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's still considered to be one of the best Super Bowl performances of all time.
Oh, yeah.
And probably would have been without the rain, but you could not have planned it any better. And he played right through it. And you're right, there was already purple lights everywhere. It was illuminating the drops of rain that just looked otherworldly. Get the hell out of here. Amazing. Oh. Mm. All that talent and lucky too. Shit.
I don't think he was lucky. I kind of think God went, you know what?
You deserve some rain.
Here we go.
This is a good song. I'm going to make it rain.
All right. Maybe so. Fair enough.
Coming up on 5 Minute News, I'm Anthony Davis. You might think it's partisan because maybe it's critical of one side or the other, but it's not. It's just the truth. And I think that's also something that's kind of unusual for Americans listening to the radio or to podcasts, because the news landscape in the States has been so partisan for so many decades. So 5 Minute News is verified, truthful, independent, unbiased, and essential world news daily.
If you're a diehard Gen X grown-up, you can pledge your support by clicking join on YouTube or by becoming a patron at genxgrownup.com/patreon.
The very best of Prince includes 1999, Let's Go Crazy, Raspberry Beret, Purple Rain, Kiss, Little Red Corvette, and many more.
Baby, it's too fast. This is what it sounds like.
To order the very best of Prince, call the number on your screen now or send just $18.98 for CD plus $4.95 shipping and handling to the address shown. Call now. Rush delivery available.
As we have established with our musical album Backtracks, in this last segment, we do something that gets increasingly more difficult the more quality the album is, honestly. And that is, we're going to definitively pick a track that we would like to represent and champion as the best track on this album.
No, that is not what
fair.
I'm doing.
Not
that
fair.
Is not what I'm doing at all.
You're okay. Saying that. All right, but it's because there's not a right answer is the problem, right?
Well, it's not mine. I'll say that.
What's the best track for you at this moment, given the current conditions? So George, with all those caveats, champion a track. Tell me which one's the best for you.
Yeah, so current conditions being that I knew both of you wanted to pick the other two songs that you guys are going to champion.
Yeah.
I had to find a third because otherwise we would likely be stepping on each other's toes left, right, and center. I knew that going in. I'm like, okay, well, I know John and Mo are going to pick these two songs, so you guys can figure that out. I decided, why not go with the first song on the album, because it is super fun and it kind of, the title of it fits my personality a little bit, especially in the 80s. Let's Go Crazy was a great song. Am I going to say it's the greatest song on the album? No. There are other great songs on this album that are better than this song. However,
it's among the greatest. Sure.
Each of these songs are great in their own right. It's... I mean, there are some things that it's very difficult to pick the best of.
Yeah.
And I think this album is kind of that way. Pick the best song from this album. Maybe there are songs that are slightly lesser than others, but that doesn't make a single song the greatest song of the album, because every fucking thing on this album is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's the hardest thing. And I said a minute ago that I was about to change my answer, but it would screw up all of our coordination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Because, look, I could pick three or four and explain why I think they're the best for any given situation or whatever. But I have selected to champion When Doves Cry. It's
a good one. I mean, it's a good one, too.
It's a number one.
It is. It is. I feel like it stands out for me because there are several songs in this album that are kind of samey. Now, careful. Don't jump on me. Samey in that they're about pursuing a love interest. There's a lot of that on this album.
That's okay.
Right. So the thematically samey, right? The very reason I said I so much enjoy Baby I'm a Star, which is not my pick, by the way, obviously When Doves Cry, is because it's a different kind of song. And that's why I like When Doves Cry, though it's this great pop song. At its core, when you dig into the lyrics, there's a lot of discussion about dealing with the pain and hurt of losing a loved one. And it's not front and center, but it's woven throughout this on how, you know, the sadness of that can be inevitable and you just got to accept it and move on and move forward. And there's a positive message to it while also dealing with things that happen to us in real life. And it's another one where I felt there was a level of maturity Prince was exhibiting beyond his years at this point, where he walked the line, a great pop song that you just listen to the tune and the rhythm, and it's amazing. And the more you choose to dig into it, the more layers of the onion you peel back, the more mature and serious it is, and the more I like and respect this song. So that's why ultimately I landed on and stuck with, after waffling, When Doves Cry for my pick. So, Mo,
can't
how about
blame
you?
Me for waffling.
Yeah.
So you guys, like, I mean, like you said, I could have picked, like, when I first saw the two you picked, I was like, damn it. But then I was like, wait, there's plenty more from here.
Right.
And then when I thought about it, the more I thought about it, this actually would have been my first pick, which is Purple Rain itself, the title song.
Fair point.
And this is going to be a totally non-scientific reason for me. For some reason, this seems to be showing Prince's talent the most to me. I don't know why. And I don't know if there's a reason for it. And maybe, you know, but just like the whole, like, it's just mostly it's like him and the guitar. Mm-hmm. It just seemed like that was like, this was like a Prince song. You know, yeah, the band's in there, but really I think it was just him mostly that helped the focus of it. And so it just seems like that's why I just really, really just always enjoyed this song. And it's also, it's 8 minutes long. I mean, it's a long song, but I can listen to it over and over and over again. And the 8 minutes just flies by.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you'll notice that George did not call bullshit on either of us because there are no wrong answers to championing a track off of this album.
I would have picked both of those songs for the one for me to champion, I knew I had to leave them open for everybody else to have a spot.
Man. One more little nugget of trivia here that Marcus shared with us. And again, Marcus, thank you so much for your research and your enthusiasm and your willingness to volunteer to do the research for this. I know it was a bit mercenary because you want to make sure we did the backtrack, which is fine. We accept bribes. It's no problem. But he had this quote that said, Prince was very excited. The Revolution's drummer, Bobby Z, remembers of that August night they introduced Purple Rain to the world. He was saying, we're going to make history. That's what he was pushing us to do. And that's exactly what they fucking did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
What a backtrack. There's no low points in this album or in this backtrack. I hope, listener, you have enjoyed this. I know that we've started to get a lot of feedback on these album backtracks, and I think this will not be the last one we do by a stretch. A lot of great albums out there. Write in and let us know what you thought of this one, what ones you would like to see next, and we will take that under advisement. Before we leave, I have to send our heartfelt thanks to another brand new patron.
Wow.
Headed over to genxgrownup.com/Patreon and chucked us a few bucks every month to just help us continue to do what we do. Keep the lights on, pay the bills, help support us. Albert R. Thank you so much, Albert. I see you. He stops by my vlog. He's commenting on YouTube videos. He is a holistic Gen X grown-up fan. He's in all of it. Albert, thank you for your support. As you know, you're joining a roster of amazing people. I cannot believe the caliber of people that flock to us, that want to support us, that believe in us. It tells me we're doing something right. If you would like to join Albert and that crew of amazing people, all you have to do, head over to patreon.com/GenXGrownUp for as little as a buck a month. You can add your name to the roster and further support what it is that we're doing. That's going to wrap it up for this backtrack. Don't worry, we'll be back in 2 weeks with another one, but next week is the standard edition of our show. Until then, I am John. George, thank you so much for being here, man.
Yes, sir.
Mo, you know I appreciate you, pal.
Always fun, man.
Fourth listener, it's you, though. We all appreciate most of all, and we can't wait to talk to you again next time. Bye-bye.
See you guys.
Take care, everybody.
Gen X Grown Up is a member of the Evergreen Podcast family. Learn more at evergreenpodcasts.com. No more washy shows till sunrise. Unacceptable for grown-ups. Your dinner cannot just be free.
french fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up.
Just wondering if the ice cream truck could be labeled like push-ups and have a bra.
Oh,
as
yes.
the thing, right?
Yes.
Mm,
bomb
yeah,
pops.
I like that.
There's got to be a million and one products that right. you could throw up there that would...
Bombshell pops, they would be.
Exactly.
Everybody's got to wear the Daisy Dukes, according to George.
Right?
Well, yeah.
In a world infatuated with comic fandom, comes a show to help us remember the talents that have inspired us.
Whoa, 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 cut.
Oh, come on, it wasn't that bad.
It's a bit dramatic. Let's just tell them about the show, guys.
We are the Canned Air Podcast.
Join us weekly for a comedic trip through pop culture.
We also welcome some cool comic creators, as well as some of the voice and screen actors that helped shape your childhood.
Find us on CannedAirPodcast.com and on the Evergreen Podcast Network.